Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
We've reached the day of the NFL Draft. Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. And yes, it's a very important day for the national sports scene because of the NFL Draft. And we'll bring you live coverage tonight from 5:45 on. We're going to talk a lot of NFL football. We'll have a live podium feed set up with Roger Goodell in Philadelphia, so you will hear the draft selections real time. I had somebody ask me, why do you guys do the NFL draft on air? Well, first off, it's a big deal now. The NFL draft is an event. I know a lot of people that have draft parties, but I'll tell you the story. It was about 5 years ago. It was just a couple of days before my wedding, and I had a lot of friends from out of town fly in. They wanted to go golfing on a Thursday night, and I said, you can't go golfing. We got the NFL draft tonight. That's what we have to watch. We couldn't do that. We had to go golfing. I'm out on the golf course, and I'm playing with the radio, and I can't find the NFL draft anywhere on the radio. I mean, that's unacceptable. That can't happen, right? Got to have the NFL draft on the radio. That's why we air it here on KOAL. I figure if I wanted to listen to the draft, I'm sure you want to listen to the draft. Not everybody can sit down and watch. So we're going to have coverage of the entire first round. Myself, alongside Chris Winfrey, will bring you the analysis in between each pick as we break from the podium and come back. And plus, we'll be joined by Steve Bordstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. So I'm excited for that. A little bit of the intrigue typically goes away about 2 hours before the draft because you find out who the number one pick is going to be because the Browns are on the clock. And there was speculation that perhaps Cleveland would attempt to move this pick. It's not happening. It has pretty much leaked that the Browns plan on taking Myles Garrett with the number one pick, which is no shock. This is exactly what we thought would happen since about January. The Browns debated on who to select, maybe going a quarterback at number one. I think once we got through the pro days and the combine, it was pretty obvious who the best player or the most athletic player in this draft is, and that's Myles Garrett, a defensive end. So the Browns go 1-15 last year. Mitch Trubisky, I think, also was probably in the running for number one, but there's a chance that he's going to be available at number 12. And so Garrett, a former Texas A&M star, widespread acclaim for his defensive standout skills, left the Aggies with 31 career sacks and 141 tackles. In his last season, he had 15 tackles for a loss, 8.5 for sacks while playing through an ankle injury. He's 6'4", weighs 272 pounds, and he is going to go number one. A lot of people believe that he's the next Julius Peppers. He's been criticized for not going all out in every play, very similar to what happened with Jadeveon Clowney, and imagine that, he comes from the SEC. But he's joining a defense which is coached by Greg Williams, former Rams defensive coordinator, who's very aggressive. And you have Jamie Collins at linebacker, you have Danny Shelton also on the line, you got Joe Hayden at quarterback. I think that Myles Garrett's going to fit in nicely with this defense. He will be the number one pick in tonight's NFL draft. That has leaked. Let's move on and take a look at some of the other sports headlines. Rajon Rondo, long shot for Game 6. We know he didn't play last night in Game 5. And to no surprise, at least in my eyes, the Celtics have now won 3 consecutive games in that series. I told people not to sleep on the Celtics. Never have trust in a team that goes 41-41 in the Eastern Conference and the Bulls. And really, nothing's changed with Rondo. He's doubtful for Game 6, probably done for the season. I would like to believe that the Celtics close this out in Game 6, which would be at the United Center. If not, they're winning Game 7. I just don't see Chicago pulling out another game in that series. That's a couple of the big headlines. Let's take a look at the Major League Baseball scoreboard. We have had day baseball pretty much all day long. Right now, the Dodgers and the Giants are battling in the eighth inning. This game tied 1-1. The Nationals rout the Rockies 15-2. This one not over yet, but it's just a mere formality at this point as we near the ninth inning. Final scores from earlier today. Philadelphia tops Miami 3-2. It was Seattle over the Tigers 2-1. The Braves topping the Mets 7-5. We get the Cardinals over the Blue Jays 8-4. So a lot of day baseball. Getting ready to start right now, it's the Houston Astros against the Cleveland Indians. The Yankees and the Red Sox will start things at 5:10 p.m. We get the Blue Jays and the Cardinals also in the 5 o'clock hour. Two nightcap games. San Diego at Arizona at 7:45. And then at 8, it's Oakland at Anaheim. As far as the NBA schedule goes, Jazz fans have got to wait one more day to potentially advance to the second round. That game's tomorrow night, but we do have two very interesting matchups tonight, two potentially closeout games. Toronto on the road to take on Milwaukee, and then we get San Antonio at Memphis. Those games will get rolling at 5, doubleheader action on TNT. We're going to talk a lot of NFL football on the show today, but we got a break for just a moment. When we return, we'll talk to Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbon Dino Baseball Squad. Now, Carbon had a golden opportunity to grab a Region 12 championship. Unfortunately, back-to-back losses to Canyon View on Tuesday prevents that from happening. Carbon will take on Canyon View again tomorrow. Now, if the Dinos can get a win, they lock themselves in for the most part at number 2 in the region. A loss means they'll be scoreboard watching next week and could potentially drop to number 3. We'll talk to Coach Cincinnatus about that when we return. It's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Thursday edition of the show, and we're back after this.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things. Play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
We're going to talk some high school baseball here on Drive Time Sports. Now, earlier in the week, the Carbon Dinos had a golden opportunity to potentially grab a Region 12 championship. Unfortunately, they suffered back-to-back losses to the Canyon View Falcons at home. Joining us right now in the studio to talk a bit about that, we have head coach Jeff Cincinnatus. Coach, it's good as always to get you in. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you getting me into, Jordan. Thanks.
Definitely, Coach. Let's start by talking about how things went on Tuesday night. I mean, again, it was a great opportunity for your team. First game was kind of a heartbreaker, falling 4-3, giving up two runs late in the contest. Second game, not so much, 14-4, but it was close midway through. So it was entertaining baseball nonetheless.
Yeah, two games for us on Tuesday, really playing for the region championship like we spoke about last week, and playing a good Canyon View team who were region champs last year in our region and picked again to win the region championship this year. And you know, we lose a tough one, 4-3. We give up two runs in the seventh inning. In the first game, I thought an excellent pitching job done by Zach Bradley in our first game. I think me and you spoke about it earlier. I don't think he gave up a hit until the fourth inning or something. But yeah, just a great pitching performance. We out-hit him 8-5 in the game, but you know, five errors in the field on defense really cost us the ball game. And at this point in time in the season, you just can't make errors against good teams and expect to win baseball games. So, you know, we lose a close one, 4-3. We come back in the second game, I thought, really flat, not playing with a lot of energy, which, you know, we still have an opportunity for a region championship. I mean, even though we lost the first, you know, an opportunity to win the second game and then, you know, then go to Canyon View on Friday and win another one still means a region championship for us. And just real disappointed on how our kids came out in the second game and really didn't play with a lot of effort. I got after them after the first game and kind of challenged them a little bit. And was just a little bit disappointed on how we responded to that challenge. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, high school kids are tough. They're tough to read sometimes. You try and push the right buttons sometimes as a coach, and maybe you push the wrong ones. But, you know, to me, you got to go back out and you got to battle and you got to step back up and defend your home field. And we just didn't do that in the second game, even though it was close throughout the contest. You know, we gave up three runs in the first, come back and get to ourselves. Keep it at 5-4 in the fifth inning, but then just in the sixth and seventh inning, you know, just give up a bunch of runs, end up getting beat 14-4. But again, in that game, errors was the number one thing that killed us. We had seven errors in the second game, 12 errors on the day in two games, and you're not going to beat good teams. You're not going to beat mediocre teams making 12 errors in two games. So just real disappointed in the errors and how they hurt us. And, you know, just a disappointing day as far as Carbon High baseball goes, losing the two games there. But you know what? it's a bump in the road. You've got to bounce back from it. You've got to learn from it. Again, we weren't winning a state championship on Tuesday. We were looking to win a region championship, which was one of our goals. But you know, ultimately, the state championship is our big goal and our ultimate goal for everybody. And you know, it's just a bump in the road to that. So we've got to learn from it. We've got to bounce back. We've got to finish up tomorrow our region play at Canyon View, hopefully with a win, get back on a winning note. And then we got a couple of non-league games next week, and the state tournament starts. So we're still on pace for what we need to do. We just need to learn from our mistakes and clean some things up.
You know, you look at the way the season has unfolded for this team. You put yourself in a great position. I think at the beginning of the year, Coach Vada said, you just got to beat Canyon View 2 out of 3 to win a region crown. 2 of those 3 will come at home. You would have taken that, right, at the beginning of the year?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you know, we lost a lot of great talent off last year's team. We got a lot of guys coming in this year who, you know, hadn't seen a lot of varsity time, kind of uncharted waters for a lot of our guys. So if we'd have talked about that at the beginning of the year and said that's the situation we're going to be in, you know, I'd have jumped right to it and said, let's just do that right now. But it's been a process. It's been a long process. There's been a lot of good things. You know, we were making a lot of errors early in the season. We kind of cleaned that up in the middle part of the season when we did a nice job in region play, you know, winning 3 of the series, 2 of the series anyway. But then the errors crept back in the other day, and boy, it just really hurts to have those things creep back in when you've been doing such a good job with them. And, you know, our pitching was coming along early in the season. It was our pitching that was a little bit behind, and, you know, we weren't doing a real good job on the mound. We were walking too many guys and doing things like that. And I knew once we got that cleaned up, I thought we'd be, you know, in good shape. And we are. We're still in good shape. We need to be a little more consistent, obviously, with our bats, but that's every year. I mean, that's just the way the baseball game goes. I mean, some days you swing the bat, some days you don't. But the teams that ultimately win a state championship put it all together, you know, pitching, hitting, and defense, and that's why they win. And so we need to put those things back together here in the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season and give ourselves a chance to win and beat anybody that we, you know, we face.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbondale baseball team. How have the kids been mentally since losing those 2 games? Because you talk about having to come back, bounce back, and get back and rolling. Sometimes that's easier said than done, especially when you have your ultimate goal or your first goal right there for you on your home field. How have the kids looked and communicated with you since?
You know, there hasn't been a lot of communication, really. It's kind of a gray area right now. You know, we're really going to see how we respond and play tomorrow. We only had the one practice yesterday since dropping the 2 games. We worked a lot on defense yesterday. You know, today we'll get back after it, probably get a lot of batting practice in today and see where we're at. But, you know, ultimately it's going to be how we play on Friday and how they respond. I mean, we need to go get a win. Even though we're not playing for the region championship, we're still playing for seeding in our region. We want to, you know, finish as high as we can, and the 2 seed is still on the line for us. We're either going to be the 2 or 3 seed now. We're not going to drop to the 4 seed. That would be, you know, impossible for us to drop that low. So we're going to be a 2 or 3 seed. We're going to travel for the first weekend of the state tournament, but, you know, just depending on where we go and who we play now. But still, it's not so much about who we're playing or where we're going. It's about what Carbon High is doing at that point in time, and it's the way it is all year long with us. I'm just more concerned with where we're at, not with what team we're playing. And, you know, it's hard to focus on somebody else when we're so focused on ourselves and where we're at. So we just need to see how we respond tomorrow. Hopefully the guys, you know, it's a long bus ride down to Cedar. Hopefully they're, you know, thinking about the game and preparing themselves, and we go play well and come home and get ready to play, you know, like I said, a couple of non-league games next week to kind of fine-tune some things and then be ready for the following weekend. And so we'll just see how it goes. Right now, it's really kind of too early to tell how we're going to respond to these 2 losses. Obviously, I'm sure they're down. You know, it's a goal that they had, and it was right there for them. And when you take something away from somebody, you know, it's hard to bounce back. But it's our job as a coaching staff to try and get the kids to bounce back and focus back on what the ultimate goal was, which is a state championship, and that's still in play for us. So, you know, we got to put this away as much as it hurts. You know, I've been moping around for 2 days now, and I need to get myself picked back up too. You know, it was right there for your kids, and you know they've worked hard and they deserve it, and they just didn't get it. And so it's hard as a coach to not see your guys get rewarded with, you know, what they wanted out of region play. But at the same time, you know, I think a region or a state championship would erase all of those memories. So, you know, we still got to bounce back and focus on our ultimate goal, which is that state championship.
Any doubt in your mind that this team can compete with the top squads in 3A? You outplayed Canyon View for the majority of the first game, outplayed them in splurts in that second game, and that's the best team in Region 12, knowing that they're going to more than likely be the one. So, I mean, I guess you can look at it from that perspective, right, that you outplayed the best team in the region at times.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, especially with the new pitching rule changes that have come into effect this year, I think it might level out the field just a little bit more than it has in the past. But, you know, I think the teams that have three or four really good pitchers are going to shine through a little bit more than maybe they have in the past. And you know, and I'm really confident with our pitching staff. I mean, our pitchers have really done a nice job here in the second half of the season and kept us in ball games. And we've just kind of let them down with our defense and then some games with not hitting the ball. But I've been really pleased with our pitching, you know, lately. And if they continue to get better these next couple weeks and they have that confidence and focus going into the state tournament, you know, I believe we can go in there and play with anybody and beat anybody. You know, I don't see too many teams in the state in 3A right now that, you know, go five or six pitchers deep and that have been really using those guys all year. If you look at everybody and you look at box scores, it's been kind of a one or two man show. I mean, maybe a third guy in there who's done a decent job. And so, you know, pitching wise, it hasn't been any better than what we've done pitching wise all year. It's just been a little bit more consistent with the bats on some teams and then cleaning the defense up. And those are just things, those can be cleaned up. And, you know, they're things that we need to work on. We're not just getting beat because we're not as good as somebody. And so that's what I always tell the guys. I mean, if we were just getting beat by better teams and we just weren't as good as they are and we're not going to be as good as they are, then you have something to worry about. But we have the capability. We have the players to do it. I'm confident with our coaching staff. You know, they're really doing a good job with the guys. And we just need to be a little bit more focused as players on what we're being asked to do and how we do it. And, you know, we just have some mental lapses that have really cost us in games so far. We talked a little bit off air about some base running mistakes and things like that. Those are mental things that we're just not thinking about at the time, and we need to clean those things up. And if we can put it all together in the last couple of weeks, you know, anything can happen. I mean, a few years back, a Gransfield team came from nowhere, won a state championship, hadn't done much all year long, you know, beat all the best teams in the state, and, you know, were really overlooked. And so, hey, it happens, and, you know, we're going to be right there when the end of the year hopefully rolls around and giving ourselves a chance to win that title.
We'll end with this, Coach. What does the schedule look like for you guys next week once we wrap up the regular season tomorrow?
So after the regular season, next week on Wednesday at home, our young guys are scheduled to play Payson, a sophomore and freshman doubleheader, starting at 3 o'clock in Helper. And then we have an open spot because we had an earlier varsity game get rained out with Union in the year. So we're going to do an alumni game at 7:30 Wednesday night, and I encourage everyone to come out. Hopefully the weather warms back up. Obviously it's really cold today, but it does look better next week. And you know, we're going to do a 7:30 start. There's a lot of people who haven't had a chance to come out and watch us play because we do play so early, and we've got a group of alumni guys coming back, mostly guys that played Helper American Legion baseball for me. They're going to come back out and play, and guys that played at Carbon High, and that game has to count for us on our season schedule anytime we play something at the varsity level. So, you know, we're using it to get better. We're using it like a regular game for us to get better for the state tournament. We're going to have our senior night that night, and, you know, got some festivities there to announce our seven seniors and recognize them and their parents, and, you know, some academic all-region and all-state honors for baseball and things like that. So, you know, that's going to be a good night for us, hopefully. We encourage everybody to come out at 7:30 and watch that varsity game. And if you can get there earlier and watch our younger guys play if you haven't had a chance to. And then on Saturday, we go up and travel up to Sky Ridge, which is a new high school up in the Lehigh area, a big school who's been doing really well this year. And, you know, that's going to be our final test of the season before the state tournament starts. And we're going to go up there and just let all our pitchers get some time. Hopefully, you know, get some swings in and just fine tune some things, and that'll be our last game before the state tournament starts, which is the following Saturday. And like I said, we'll be traveling and we'll get back on the air and talk about where we're going and who we're facing before that happens. But as far as next week goes, Wednesday is our last home day. I encourage everyone to come out, watch our young guys play, and then hopefully stick around and watch, you know, some of maybe your favorite guys that have been out of baseball for the last few years. It seems to be a really fun event with these guys coming back and playing an alumni game against our current high school squad. So encourage everyone to come out and enjoy some baseball next week.
Coach, always fun to get an update from you on the team. Thank you very much. Best of luck tomorrow, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
We have more coming up here on Drive Time Sports. We'll move to the national scene right after this.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. This is must. Say it again. Buscarini. All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queens, Virginia, right now.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down.
Price, Utah.
Now.
Me and my man, Trav. Ah! Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
We'll focus on the NFL draft entirely for this segment. We're inching closer and closer to it. First pick should be announced at 6:10. Well, should be announced at 6, but I'll tell you, the Browns, who we already know are taking Myles Garrett number one, they'll use all 10 minutes with the very first pick in the draft. That we know for a fact. That's just, it always happens that way. But the 49ers are on the clock with Myles Garrett off the board, and there's several different directions the 49ers can go with this pick. I think it's also possible that a trade could be in the works, but Jamal Adams, the safety out of LSU, it's a hot name, and it's not somebody that I had mocked for San Francisco at number two, but I'm starting to think that this is a real possibility. Other options would be Solomon Thomas. If the pick is Thomas, not a huge shock. I've actually had him slotted number two for a while, and I also thought that there was a good chance that perhaps the Niners would flirt with the idea of taking Leonard Fournette at number two. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. I think it's actually down to defense. Jamal Adams or Solomon Thomas at number two for the 49ers. Now, last week I was able and fortunate enough to sit in on a conference call with John Gruden with about 50 other media members. It was fantastic stuff listening to Gruden answer question after question. Seven questions in particular that will relate to the NFL draft tonight that I think were most relevant when asked. And with the 49ers being on the clock right now, this first question was asked from a media member in the Bay Area about the difference of having a guy who was just responsible for the offense, like Kyle Shanahan was at Atlanta last year, now in control of an entire team. And while he's an offensive specialist, he has to flirt with the idea of drafting someone like Thomas or Adams with the number two pick. That's what he asked to John Gruden. How difficult would it be, or how difficult is it for a coach, offensive-minded, to take complete control of a team and now have to focus defensively? Here's what Gruden had to say.
Yeah, that's a big challenge. Obviously, you have to, number one, hire a staff. And unfortunately, all the people that you want to hire aren't available. You can't get them because they're under contract. So the first thing you have to do is hire a quality coaching staff, and then you have to teach your system of offense, because that's why you got the job. So he's got to spend a lot of time making sure that his new coaches know exactly what he's looking for and looking to do terminology-wise on offense. And then obviously hire the right defensive coach that you can delegate some authority to so he can do the same thing on that side of the ball. And then you have to budget your time extremely well with offense, defense, your special teams, and your personnel people. And I know he's very fortunate, at least that's what he said, to have the opportunity to work with John Lynch in the front office. So I'm sure they're spending a lot of time together trying to find the criteria that they're looking for on both sides of the ball. So get some caffeine in you. Make sure you get up early, stay late. I remember when I took over as the head coach of the Raiders and then Tampa Bay, the first 100 to 200 days are a grind, and I'm sure Kyle's feeling it right now.
Again, that was John Gruden last week in response to a question about Kyle Shanahan and the challenges that he'll face now as a head coach. From that point on, there was a lot of talk about the quarterback position. Four quarterbacks, I think, could go in the first round. I'm starting to think that maybe three go. I think Mitch Trubisky is a guaranteed first-round pick. We know that. He's not on the board past number 12. After that, you have Deshaun Watson. Didn't win the Heisman, but won a national championship. DeShone Kizer, who I think has all the physical ability to play, but is very raw. And yet, Pat Mahomes as well. Good chance that three go in the first round. Great chance all four are gone by the time we hit the third round. But as far as the quarterbacks that are ready right now, a quarterback that could step in and help your team win right now, John Gruden's answer may just surprise you a bit.
That's a tough question. You know, I do think several of these underclassmen are a year away, personally. I like the kid at Pitt, honestly. If you said I had to go out there and strap it on today as a head coach, I'd go out there with Nathan Peterman out of Pitt. He'd allow us to do just about anything in the game plan. I think he throws the ball pretty darn good. He's athletic and very, very sharp. So I think he's a lot like Andy Dalton to me. He reminds me of Dalton so much coming out of TCU. I would probably go with Peterman if I had to play him in a few months.
I mentioned DeShone Kizer, a kid that's 6'4", weighs 230 pounds. I think he's got all the physical ability, still very raw. Entered a little prematurely. I think if he waits another year, this kid's a top 10 pick. But, I mean, that's excellent incentive for somebody late in the first round to snag him up. John Gruden was asked, and again, he's got the Gruden quarterback camp. He hung around these kids. If he had a first-round pick, would he use it on DeShone Kizer? I say Kizer goes number 30 to Pittsburgh. Makes too much sense. Gruden says he wouldn't use a first-round pick on Kizer.
I liked him when I met with him. He's obviously very sharp, well-spoken, charismatic in a lot of ways. I also know he's emotional. He's not real proud, I don't think, of their 4-8 record. But I did like him. I thought he had a genuine, sincere, honest nature about him. I did like his obvious size and strength of his arm is impressive. Would I use a first-round pick on him? Probably not. I don't think the body of work is complete. I think there are some things that he's got to resolve in terms of end-of-game situations, winning. There's some things I think that he's still a little rough around the edges, but from a talent standpoint, he's got a lot of ability. He's athletic, he's tough, and he's got a cannon for an arm, but I do think that I would probably have a hard time taking him in the first round this year.
Perhaps the most interesting question in the draft as we get closer and closer to it is, at what point is it okay to take a running back? If you take a running back in the top 10, he better be a stud. The Rams took Gurley at number 10 2 years ago. He was Offensive Rookie of the Year. The Cowboys took Ezekiel Elliott at number 4, Offensive Rookie of the Year. Again, I think the Niners have flirted with the idea of Leonard Fournette at number 2. More than likely, Fournette goes 6 to the Jets, and then you have Christian McCaffrey falling at number 8 to the Carolina Panthers. So we could see two backs go in 3 picks. If both players are still on the board at number 8, if the Jets were to go quarterback, which is possible as well, who fits the system in Carolina better? John Gruden?
Wow, that's a great question. They're completely different backs, as you know. I think it depends on what your vision is offensively, what you want to do. I know Jonathan Stewart is 30 years old now. Fozzie Whitaker's there. They've got some pretty good backup young backs, but if you want a feature back, if you want an I formation tailback, Fournette is your guy. I just think he's built for the long haul. He's a punishing runner. I do like him a lot. McCaffrey is he's a jack of all trades. I think you got to be able to use him creatively in your passing game. That's where, to me, he is the best. In the return game, obviously, but as a receiver, as a joker, as a guy that can line up in any formation and be a threat at any time, if that's your offense, I think McCaffrey is for you. If you're looking to be a little bit more conventional, take the burden off your quarterback and pound the ball, Fournette is your guy, and I think it all depends on which direction Ron Rivera, Mike, and Coach Shula want to go.
Now, Coach Kyle Whittingham is going to be in attendance at the draft tonight because Garrett Bowles is projected to be a first-round pick. We talked to Coach Wood about that on the air a few weeks ago. Garrett Bowles really turning a lot of heads this last season of the Pac-12. I'm not going to say he was unknown, because if you're a Utah Ute fan, you knew who Garrett Bowles was. But later on in the season, he started picking up national recognition with the way he performed in a very difficult Pac-12 conference. But there have been a lot of linemen that were selected in the top 10 over the past 4 or 5 years that haven't necessarily panned out. I think the Ravens did well last year with Ronnie Stanley. They got their left tackle of the future. But there's been several whiffs as far as linemen go in the early portion of the draft. And it seems like the right idea. I mean, why did Ezekiel Elliott rush for as many yards as he did last year? Why was Zeke Elliott so impressive as a rookie? It's because the Cowboys have the best offensive line that we've seen in about 10 years in the league. However, it's kind of a risk when you're looking at linemen. I mean, look at Greg Robinson, the kid from Auburn. Won a national championship at Auburn. Rams actually drafted him number 2. He hasn't been good. They drafted him as a tackle. Now he's got to play guard. And you use the number 2 overall pick in the draft on this guy. That's not good. John Gruden talking about the tough transition for linemen as they go from college to the NFL.
When you watch college football, a lot of these linemen don't even get in a stance anymore. They're all in upright two-point stances. The range of blocks that they're asked to execute is limited. Everybody pretty much is running a zone scheme. Pass protection, a lot of it now is these RPOs, run-pass options, where it's not even a pass protection. So I think the communication with the no-huddle offenses has reduced their stances. They got a long way to go. And the range of blocks that they have to execute is limited. So you're really getting a lot of raw, unproven prospects, and coaching at the NFL level, offensive line coaching is paramount, if you ask me. And I think if you look at the New England Patriots, the return of Dante Scarnecchia, the great offensive line coaches have a real, real say in who's good and who isn't, in my opinion.
I'll play you one last clip as we go full circle. John Gruden was asked about Mitch Trubisky, who, again, everyone expects to be the first quarterback off of the board tonight. Is it a cause for concern that this kid only played or only started 13 games in college?
Well, in regards to the pressure, I don't think anybody can answer that but him, because it's going to certainly certainly be a lot to deal with playing for your hometown team. Do the 13 starts concern me? Yes, they do. I don't remember many quarterbacks coming out with just 13 career starts. They didn't finish strong either. They lost in the bowl game to Stanford. The Virginia Tech game was not good. They lost to Duke in a big game. They didn't finish the season real strong either. And I thought they had a pretty good supporting cast around him. I think you're going to see Bug Howard, Switzer. You're going to see Logan. You're going to see some of those men get drafted. I would have liked to see him stay, but he is talented. He did get results. He did have some really good moments in Tallahassee against FSU, bringing him back to beat Pitt. He is a dual threat. A lot of people don't realize how athletic Trubisky is, but he is still a big mystery to a lot of people in this draft. It's going to be very interesting to see how high he goes. Cleveland has got to address the quarterback position. It all depends on what they think of Trubisky, Mahomes, whoever else, Deshaun Watson, they may be considering at the top of the first round. I mean, there are some teams to me, San Francisco, the Jets, Cleveland Browns, and there's some teams like Arizona, San Diego, and the Giants that are looking for future quarterbacks. It all depends on how they value the quarterback at the number 1 or number 12 slot.
Some of the highlights from John Gruden's conference call with about a selected 50 different media members. That was a lot of fun to sit in on that. Again, live coverage of the NFL draft coming next hour. We'll have the podium feed in Philadelphia. We'll bring you each selection in real time. We're going to break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll put the final touches on this edition of the show right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Final segment of the day here on Drive Time Sports, and then we'll pause for about 45 minutes and gear up for the NFL draft. We're going to move back over to the local sports front. Yesterday, the underclassmen for the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad, they traveled on the road to Vernal and participated in a meet against some bigger schools. Actually fared quite well. Joining us now to talk a bit about that, to round out this show, we have head coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbon Track and Field Squad. Coach, good to hear from you.
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Always, Coach. Always a pleasure to get you on. Let's talk about a busy schedule for you guys. You'll have two meets in essentially 3 days. Yesterday, you guys were at the Big Red. Invitational in Vernal. Pretty tough competition. You guys saw three other schools, and we can start by talking about how you guys performed at this particular meet, Coach.
Yeah, you know, it was an underclassman meet, so it meant we left our top kids home, and so it was like our freshman, sophomore, you know, some juniors mixed in there. They got to compete against, you know, 4A schools. We were the only 3A school there. And so it was a chance for our younger kids to kind of go out and perform and show what they had, and they did a really good job.
Well, with that being said, you guys did perform very well once again on the girls' side of the track, which that is no surprise. I mean, it's something that you guys have been doing all year long, but a second-place finish in this with your underclassmen coach, and again, we talked about the numbers thing, so you look at the overall numbers.
Yeah, you know, that second-place finish, I mean, doing well there was great, and having our girls do well. We didn't run two relays. We just kind of went over to kind of figure out, you know, get these kids some opportunities. Some of these kids are fighting for positions in our for our region team, and so they've got to be in that top four by the end of this week. And so tomorrow's the last chance for some of these kids to be in that top four and be invited to go to region with us. And so they're competing hard and doing the best they can to get there.
You guys scored 88 points. We can take a look at some of the first-place finishes from the girls. 800 meters, Grace Broadbear finished first place. You guys had Emma Haddock, I know, in the 3,200 meters. Harley Migliori.
You know, and that was, you know, Emma had a great meet, and so did Grace. Grace had a great meet. She's been trying to qualify for BYU. She needed to run 2:38, and she pulled that off and got down to the 2:38 mark. And so that was big for her. You know, we had Harley had a great meet. I mean, that girl won the long jump. I think she won the 100, or not won the 100, but she won the 200. Took third in the 100, and she was just phenomenal that whole meet. It was good.
You guys got two first place finishes from Caitlin Dimmick in the discus and the javelin. That's got to be pretty.
Caitlin Dimmick is, and I hope her mom this radio show. They can't move. They just can't move. But Caitlin is, I mean, she has thrown, she's had one of the furthest throws in the state in javelin this year. She threw a 117 a week ago. Went down to this meet and, you know, won the javelin pretty easily, and won the discus pretty easily. As a sophomore, she's just a phenomenal talent. And, you know, she ran the 200 for us down there. She wanted to jump in the 200 and jumped in, and then she also took, I think she took third in the high jump as well. And she's just a neat girl to go and compete and work hard. And not is she just good athletically, she is really just a great kid. She's just amazing.
If we talk about some of the other top performers, Coach, I mean, the throwing events are interesting as a whole. I mean, you and I have talked about this in the past. Anytime you guys can compete and get a couple of wins in the throwing events, typically things are going to go well for you at the meet.
Yeah, and it's kind of been the way it's been all year. You know, with our throwers, our girls are – we've got some really good girl throwers. I mean, all the way from, you know, Caitlin down to Harley down to – Maggie Powell had a great meet. Uraldi had a great meet. You know, we've got a lot of these younger kids that are just, they come out and throw and they work hard. You know, we've got even a younger girl, Tennyson Kuhn, that's come a long ways in what she's been able to do. And it's a lot of fun to see these girls compete. We've never been this deep in the throws, and so it's nice. You know, and on the guy side, you got Rylan Chamberlain. I got to mention him because he went out and he's improved his discus throw tremendously. I think he took third at the meet. He threw 100 in the discus, which he's never done before. And so that was neat to see, you know, a couple of our guys step in. Antonio Meekum took second in the 110s. And so it was kind of fun to see these kids do well.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbondale Track and Field Squad. Coach, let's talk about the Eastern Utah Championships. This is a fun event, a traveling trophy for both the boys and the girls, and you guys will go to Moab tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll go to Moab tomorrow, and we'll load up, and we'll go down and see what we can do. We've got a couple kids that are ailing a little bit from injury, and so we'll see if we have them on Friday. If we don't, it's, you know, in track, it's just like any other sport, next man up. And we'll go down there and compete against Eastern Utah. Our girls currently have the girls' trophy, and we're going down with every intent of bringing that back. And we're going to take our guys' team. We've got, you know, we're going to spread them out a little bit and see if we can't pull –
and get those guys up there a little bit and stuff. And so, you know, with our guys team, we can use like a Kyle Quinn. We can use him in multiple events. We can use Cash Burr in multiple events. Derek Hillam, we can do that with. Derek's, you know, he's alien. Or he's got a little bit of a muscle pull right now. So he's suffering a little bit. And so we're kind of going light on him. And so that's where Carson Frame, you know, our freshman, steps up and helps us out quite a bit. And then we'll see what these guys can do. But I'm excited to go down there and compete against Eastern Utah. You know, I look at, you know, Emory will be down there as well. And that Emory High School team, their boys team, they're a heck of a program. And says a lot about, you know, Kevin down there, the new head coach, and what he's been able to do with that team.
As far as the end of the season goes, you mentioned injuries. Is any track and field team truly healthy at this point in time? I mean, any athletes truly healthy at this point in time?
No. I would say the question is how tired are their legs, and how, you know, how bad is it, how severe are, you know, the aches and pains? A lot of these kids, you know, suffer from shin splints throughout the year, and then you just hope that that's all they get. You hope they don't have anything more severe happen. We're getting to a part of our season where we're going to start resting kids quite a bit as we're getting close to, you know, BYU and region coming up. And so there's kind of a trick to being able to get your kids to peak at the right time, and rest is a big factor in that. And so you work them hard, and then you back off, and that's usually when you start to see the peak performances, because they're finally waking up and the morning, and their legs feel really good, and they're at meets, and their legs feel good. And so hopefully we're getting to that point.
Only four meets left on the season, if we count tomorrow, including that BYU invite, which is next week. So between now and then, I mean, I guess the big focus is just making sure you get everyone qualified, right?
Right. Well, and our biggest thing is, you know, that BYU meet, we actually have a unique problem this year. BYU only allows us to have 25 entries. Excluding the 32 and the relays, and so you can have 25 events to fill, or spots to fill, and we've had 35 girls qualify for that meet, or 35 events qualify for that meet, and so we've got to go, and, you know, some of our kids have qualified for multiple events, but they might only be able to do one because we try to take everybody that's qualified. So it's a unique problem that we've never had at Carbon High, we've been talking about it last night, and it really speaks volumes to this girls team that we've got this year, in the fact that they are that talented, that we have that many kids that are qualifying in multiple events, you know. And so it's going to be a lot of fun to see where we're at next week, and if we make it through tomorrow night, and hopefully come home with the Eastern Utah Championship, and then start gearing up and getting ready for BYU and region.
Coach, before I let you go, we have to talk about Sarah Owyler, who's just been a tremendous athlete for you. And once again, she comes through in a big way. You and I were talking a little bit about this off of the cuff. We have to give Sarah some individual recognition for something that she accomplished.
Yeah, you know, she went up to the BYU multi-meet last week. And she ended up taking second in the heptathlon, and did really well. She was winning that heptathlon until the very last event, and she got beat in the last event and ended up taking second place, and that's 1A through 5A. And so for her to do that well, I mean, it was a great accomplishment for her. And, you know, it's really neat when you have a girl that has that kind of talent that can go out and do that and do really well. And I think it was a good experience for her, and, you know, it was awesome.
Coach, it's always fun to talk with you. Thank you again for giving us an update, and we'll do it again real soon.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad. Out of time on this edition of the show. We'll catch you in about 45 minutes for the NFL Draft. Be safe. I am out.